Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are continuing with our free agent series. We're doing one of the big ones, power forwards, where there are no shortage of good names on the market this summer, or at least potentially on the market. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my Danish celebrity radio superstar co-host, Morten Jensen.
All right. How's it going, Morten? I can get used to that one. I like it. I like it. It's a little ego boost in the middle of a casual everyday thing. I like it. It's completely wrong. It's very, very, it's very obnoxious, but I'll take it. It's fine.
Good. That's very wrong and completely obnoxious is kind of our motif, so this actually works out well. all right, well, let's get right into it, because we have a ton of names to discuss, although, you know, we hinted in the small forwards episode that we might break this one into two. We're not going to do that. There are legitimately at least six good free agents available. After that, we're getting back into, like, the MLE territory, so... Right. We'll keep it to one episode. That said, center is somehow even deeper than power forward. So if you need a big this summer, your team is in luck. If you need a point guard through a small forward, Godspeed to your teams.
So Daryl Morey is just like, oh, can't use this summer for anything.
Or it's perfect because he needs nothing but bigs. Maybe he's just going to rack up like veteran minimum Hassan Whiteside. The Rockets are going to win a title next year.
Well, so I kind of like the fact that we're finally here, because it feels like we've just been teasing people through the first three episodes. Like, first, we have the point guard. It was like, oh, okay, we know that it's not great, but it's going to get better in the shooting guard. And it was like, oh, that's not great either. And we kept moving all. And then last episode, we realized, hell, Brandon Ingram, based on our criteria, is not a small forward, although obviously he is, but we had to follow the rules. So,
yeah.
This one today, oh boy, we've got some names.
We've got some big names. Brandon Ingram, we will get to shortly, Mort. But first, we're going to hit the number one free agent of the summer, or possible free agent at least, Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
So this one already is complicated because, you know, back in September, I want to say, I wrote a thing for Forbes where I said, his best option is sign a 2+1. At that point, you can opt out. You can do the 10-year deal. Like, you'll have 10 years in the league. You can get your 35% max right away. LeBron is under contract guaranteed for next year. Possibly has a player option the year after. So if he opts out, you know, if you sign a 5-year max and he leaves in 2 years or leaves in a year, then you're probably just stuck on a crappy Lakers team. So that's where I was for most of this season.
Right.
Anthony Davis has a $28.75 million player option for next season, for what it's worth. Now, because of the coronavirus and the possibility that fans can't be in attendance next year and that revenues will fall and the salary cap could plunge, all of a sudden, that throws everything out of whack. I did the math here. So for him to opt in, for it to make the most financial sense for him to opt in, where he could not make more money, you know, signing a longer-term deal, the cap would have to fall about $19 million. It'd have to be, I think, $95.8 million for his player option to be higher than his max. And at that point, his player option would come down, and he would just get the max regardless. Right. So that's probably not going to happen. I think
To clarify that for me. So actually, the contract that he has, right, even though it is activated, so on the player option, if the cap declines enough, that would actually affect the last year of his contract?
I actually don't know if... I think all of this is going to be up for negotiation.
Right.
So it is too early to say either way. Probably not, but...
It's interesting that we could land in a scenario where a player gets more than his respective max, though, potentially.
Yeah, I think, because if he's opting in, I think he could, because it's part of an old contract. I think if he were to sign a new contract, he could not. Like, if he were to opt out and sign a new contract, if the cap fell below $95.8 million, he could not make more than his player option.
Right. But otherwise, it's kind of like the Ben Simmons situation. Like, his max that he's going to step into now, that is going to be dictated by what the salary cap is going to be for next season. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
No, but it's an interesting. This is all about like the cap minutia and giving the uncertainties about coronavirus. It's like we are in uncharted territory, and it's obviously horrible, but at the same time, it's also very interesting because there are completely new layers to NBA contracts right now that we are discussing, which is, you know, fascinating, horribly fascinating.
right. Fascinating for all the wrong reasons.
Yes, that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, so it is, like, we agreed, at least at the start of this exercise, that the cap is not going to fall that far. Both teams and players are going to want to avoid it.
Right.
So we've been operating under the assumption that the cap will stay around what it is this year, $109 million.
Right.
In which case, it will still behoove Anthony Davis to opt out. So that is why we are discussing him at all. I still think it is likely Anthony Davis opts out.
I mean, hell, we discussed DeMar DeRozan, and he's not going to opt out. Or he is opting out. No, he's not going to opt out. I'm getting confused here. Of course he's not going to opt out. He's going to opt in.
He says he's going to opt out, but he's probably not.
Right. It's his whole changing mindset that just got me all looped around.
Yeah. But let's say Davis does opt out, Mort.
Yes.
First of all, do you think there's any chance he leaves the Lakers this summer? Or this fall, whatever. This offseason.
Oh, you mean that he's, you know, if he's a lock to sign with the Bulls is what you're asking? Because apparently Bulls some Bulls fans are under that assumption.
Correct.
Oh, see, now I can play this two ways. I can answer in a realistic way that's going to make me lose a lot of Bulls followers on Twitter.
Okay.
Right? Or I can just play up the fantasy angle and have like 50 new Bulls fans follow me, but I have a responsibility to be honest here. No, I don't think that's going to happen. No, I think ultimately this guy is going to be a Laker for a long, long time.
Yeah, I would agree that he is not leaving the Lakers this summer. By the time this episode is live, hopefully I will have finished my piece for Forbes, kind of revisiting this discussion. But that said, what do you think is his best contractual option? We'll assume he does opt out, but should he do a 5-year max and lock into the financial security, knowing that this environment is unstable? Should he take a 1+1 deal where he can align with LeBron completely and both of them could opt out after 2021, where maybe the cap jumps right back up to where it was? Should he do the 2+1, as I, you know, laid out months ago, where he can then hit the 10-year 35% max in 2022? What do you think is his best option here?
Well, his best option is tied into how your country is going to handle this pandemic, Brian.
Uh-oh.
Exactly. So that's an impossible question. I honestly don't know, because if a second wave hits, you know, that could completely destroy everything, in which case it would have been best for him to just lock it up for 5 years.
Right.
So it's a really good question. I think it depends on, you know, how the world situation is going to be when he's about to resign. Ultimately, if we hope that everything is sort of a past issue, then I think your idea of a 2+1 makes the most sense, just for him to optimize his own earning potential, because 35% of the cap will always beat 30% of the cap.
Right.
I think that's the play. But ultimately, we know very little about what's going to happen financially to this league, because as you have alluded to numerous times on this podcast, no fans in the seats means a 40% dip.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of cheddar.
Yeah. And so here's my thinking, and I haven't fully fleshed this out in article form yet. That is hopefully what the next few days will be. Not only should the NBA have to provide an updated cap figure, because, like, normally and we discussed this, I think, for the Fournier episode. Normally, you opt out by the end of June, and the NBA doesn't decide the actual salary cap for the next season until the beginning of July. So you're making this decision somewhat blind, but the NBA has been releasing updated cap projections all year. So it might go up or down a million or two, but it's not going to be wildly different.
Right.
This year, just because we're in such unprecedented territory, the NBA basically has to come up with an agreed-upon figure for the 2020-2021 cap before any players or teams decide upon options. It's just completely unfair otherwise, because, you know, if they can't come to a solution and the cap does fall $30 million and Anthony Davis opts out and costs himself a couple million, like, he's going to be rightfully pissed about that. Mm-hmm. So I think, realistically, like, that is one of the first things they're going to have to agree upon, and then they can hash out the rest of the financial issues. The question is, are they also going to come up with updated cap projections for future years? And John Hollinger of The Athletic just wrote a really good piece about this recently, and, you know, I've been covering it for Forbes for the last month or two now as well, where they may have to say, okay, you know, next year we think we're not going to have fans in stands, or maybe we're going to have 20% capacity, whatever. But the following year, we think things are going to be relatively back to normal. So we're expecting a gigantic drop next year, and neither side, teams nor players, want that. So we're going to spread out the damage for the next couple of years. So rather than tie the cap to basketball-related income, which is how we usually do it, we're going to set fixed amounts for the next few years. We're going to say, we're, you know, the cap will be, let's freeze it at $109 million this year, so we're going to have the cap higher than the income, the revenue that we generate.
Right.
But then we're going to spread out that damage over future years, so we're going to make more money in future years than the cap is going to be set at.
Right.
So I think that's probably the most fair thing to do in terms of 2020 free agents, because then Anthony Davis can say, okay, the cap is going to be $109 million this year, $115 million next year, you know, so on and so forth. How can I optimize my earnings? Would it make more sense for me to sign the five-year max now? Should I do the 1+1, 2+1, whatever? Without that information, he's not going to know the best option. So I think if he doesn't have that information available, the 1+1 might be best for him, just to maintain the flexibility of, oh, if the cap goes soaring higher in 2021, okay, now I have the chance to recoup some of that, some of the earnings that I lost just because the cap fell this past year.
Right.
But I don't think he's going to have a full picture unless they both sides agree to say, okay, we're going to set the next 3 years' caps right now.
Or, here's a crazy thing, right? Because this is a global pandemic, maybe he should just not care if he doesn't get paid a few million when over 38 million Americans alone have lost their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that shouldn't that just fair. Be an issue. I know that I'm just going a little bit political here, but hey, a ton of people in my home country lost their jobs as well. So, to be perfectly honest, I will sleep very, very firmly tonight, if fully knowing if Anthony Davis misses out on a few million, he'll be just fine.
Yeah,
I think this is a situation where if you lose out on a couple million, because the NBA is under such extreme circumstances as ever before, I think that says a lot about your character. In that case, I would just look at it and I would go, I would take whatever option is available to me that optimizes my earnings, fine. But at no point should he be upset with the NBA for a cap estimation or for the way that they figure out is best for their long-term product. They can't operate in a manner of trying to satisfy Anthony Davis or any 2020 free agent or 2021 free agent. That's I cannot stress this enough. They should not cater to specific free agents. They have to cater to the health of the league in its entirety.
Sure. Yeah.
Having said that, I have a solution for you.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a fair point. But yeah, what's your solution?
I brought it up before. Percentage deals.
Oh, yeah.
Look, it fixes everything.
Yeah. And Bobby Marks floated that, he spoke with some executives throughout the league, and that was one of the things they came up with as well.
Give me credit, Bobby.
But they were talking about, like, revising all contracts to be percentages.
Right.
Yeah. It's smart. It would at least protect against this.
I mean, it would. I brought it up on Twitter as well a week or so ago, I think. And it got some traction because it's an interesting concept because, GMs wouldn't lose anything about it. Like, they would still know, what percentage of the cap a certain player is looking at for the next year. Like, screw the set amount. That doesn't matter. You know what the set amount is. You know what the percentages is. That's fine. You can calculate what you have remaining off of that. And you can still go over the cap. You would just... Then we would calculate it in a different way. Like, then maybe someone is, at 120%. Like, that's how we look at it. And then there's a percentage estimation of where the luxury tax kicks in. Like, I think this is doable. And maybe this is the way you just move it around these days, because that would... If I've brought it up just moments before, if a second wave hits or a third wave or a fourth wave, or if things just goes completely to doo-doo, you would still have a fixed percentage salary. And those would just fluctuate, and then you wouldn't have to worry about where does the cap come in. Doesn't matter. You're guaranteed these percentages.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of logic in that type of thinking, and I mean, agents and players alike are going to have to be creative moving forward, just because these issues probably aren't going away, unfortunately.
I mean, and it's not just this, though. This could just be a new way of doing it, so if something else pops up in the future, like, maybe it doesn't even have to be set into play now. Maybe this is something that you do for a couple years until everything is turned around, and you're back to the good old days. And then you have this contingency plan of saying, well, okay, we write this into the CBA. If a world, a global pandemic hits again, or something else just cripples the world economy and whatever, we can trigger this action, and every contract starting from the next calendar year reverts to percentage contracts.
Yeah, no, it would be smart.
Right. And then just my own personal note, because I wrote about this for Forbes last year, I still think that we should flip-flop when the player can trigger the 35% and the 30%. I don't think it makes any sense whatsoever to pay someone after their 10th year, where they're presumably starting to decline a little bit, the most money. This is still completely illogical to me. Flip them around, give the guys in the middle who are in their primes the chance to earn their 35%. It would also make it easy for NBA teams to stay competitive if they don't have to fight with the 35% with a guy who's entering his mid-30s. There, I just saw the goddamn NBA.
All right, we're done here.
We're done.
All right, well, all of that is fair about Davis, but I think we should move on because we have a lot of other big names to hit, one of whom is a guy that we thought we were going to discuss on the last episode, Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, I mean, we thought, he is a three. We just kind of forgot to look at the positional numbers, and we had to follow our own rules. Clearly, he's going to be a three with Zion Williamson moving forward. He's also the prototypical three when you look at the size, right?
Yeah.
And the skill set as well.
Yeah, for sure.
So we've talked about him before. We had that episode where we were talking about guys who would be entering restricted free agents and free agency, whether or not we should give them, a straight up max, or whether it would behoove the team to just go into restricted free agency with them. And we both agreed, immediately on Ingram. Like, he's shown enough, even though he's only had this one breakout year. Like, it was enough. He's a max guy, and there's nothing much to it. I will say I've seen a little bit of a pushback on Twitter when people argue about Brandon, basically saying, well, the 3 years in LA, he wasn't this caliber of player. Maybe this is a one-year wonder. I think that's a bit negative, because he did take steps every single year. And I think it also takes time for someone like him to you know, get acclimated to the league. And sure. last year he was not playing behind LeBron, but he was playing, you know, or not in LeBron's shadow. I don't know how to say that. Like he just didn't have the featured role that he had in New Orleans this year. And LeBron is very ball dominant. And at this point, Ingram wasn't really a 3-point shooter. He took less than 2 per game. So that also makes it difficult because everything was just crowded.
Right.
He got away from LeBron and suddenly he just exploded because he had the ball in his hands a lot more. He was willing to make the decisions on the fly. He was willing to take more threes. He got to the line more. He just did everything else. And you could see how natural it was for him. And I think that's what did it for me, at least. I saw a guy who just played the game that he used to do with certain changes, sure, but it was the confidence level. It was the fact that, oh, I've been actually been able to do this for a while. I just didn't have the opportunity. I didn't have the support. I didn't have the organizational trust. But here, I have everyone working on, you know, working behind me and trusting me with the ball in their hands, and I'm making the most of it.
Right.
I think that matters. I think mentality matters. And when you look at Brandon Ingram, don't you agree that he looks very, very confident now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the only question, like, the Pelicans are not going to let Ingram go.
Right.
I think there's no way that Brandon Ingram is not a New Orleans Pelican next year, even if he does get maxed. I think the question with him is, if you're the Pelicans, do you just, first day of free agency, offer him the 5-year max right away?
I mean... Yes, because here's the thing. If you don't, Atlanta's right there.
Yep.
Atlanta is right there. I mean, you would insult him immediately, and then Atlanta would be saying, oh, if they're not gonna, we're gonna show the love. And then even if New Orleans maxes, you might have a Gordon Hayward situation on your hands.
Yep.
And that is just like, it is so easy to get caught on getting a bargain that you can actually lose sight of getting a bargain even at a max contract, because like we said, you know, some guys are just above their contracts, you know, their max contracts. We don't know whether or not Brandon Ingram is going to be a guy who outperforms his max contract, but if you look at how he played this year at such a young age, it would be foolish to expect him to regress.
Right.
So if he gets even better and he becomes this 27-8 kind of guy, I know that's unreasonable given that Zion is there, yada, 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 but like on a per-minute basis then. Yeah, he could be a guy who gets a max and outperforms it, in which case you're getting a bargain.
Yeah. The one potential hang-up, I guess, if you're the Pelicans, is that you can only offer the 5-year extension to two guys coming off a rookie deal. You have Ingram, Lonzo, Zion. Zion is clearly getting one if he stays healthy. So if you give it to Ingram, you can't give it to Lonzo.
Oh, no. What should they do?
Right. But I mean, Lonzo was better last year. Like, Lonzo showed me something this past year. I'm higher on him than I was a year ago.
That's same true for me. That doesn't mean he's a damn max player.
Right, right. Or even, yeah, a 5-year
extension. Or even 5-year extension. You give Lonzo, you know, I don't know what you give Lonzo. Like,
just the normal 4-year extension.
Yeah, but not like, even a max. I'm not maxing Lonzo.
No.
I'm giving, 4-year extension and, like, I don't even know the numbers. I need to see a little bit more, but he definitely enters restricted free agency, I think. I mean,
yeah, I don't think he signs an extension this year.
Right. And then if someone else maxes him, you just say, okay, well, you know what, Lonzo, it was good knowing you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Have fun on the Knicks.
Yeah. Oh, God.
With LaMelo.
With LaMelo. Oh, my Lord. And I like LaMelo. That's not, it's just, I don't foresee this being an issue. That your future is Zion and it's Ingram and Ball is down on that list. And I'm not saying Ball isn't a crucial element because he's the setup guy. He's your quarterback. I'm not saying he's not important, but he's not max important.
No, yeah. If the hang up is the 5th year, that's stupid. You're not giving Lonzo the 5th year unless he just turns into poor man's Luka Doncic this year, which I don't see happening. So
you don't see him turning into a 30-point triple-double threat?
No, I know. It's a really bold take for me.
I know. I mean, Voldemort would like a word.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, so I agree. Yeah, if you're the Pelicans, you just give... Because you're right. Atlanta is out there, and Ingram is a guy that makes so much sense for them. Positionally, age-wise, in terms of his fit next to Trey, like, I don't think they would have any problem holding... You know, they can't offer it during the moratorium, or he can't sign it during the moratorium. They'll say, you know what? Screw it. We're not going to sign a free agent that first week. We're saving our cap space for Brandon Ingram. The second the moratorium is over, we are having him sign us our max offer sheet. We'll load it with whatever possible horrendous, like trade kicker, whatever, anything to make it, give him a player option, anything to make it less palatable.
A Sean Marks special.
Yeah.
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 So here's the thing. I know that Atlanta is not going to get him, even if they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. They should still do it. Not just for, you know, clocking up New Orleans' cap a little bit. They should also do it just to be in the room. They should. This is a sign. This is a way of basically saying, we're here. Mm-hmm. We're ready. We're ready to get serious. We put an offer on the table that was fair for Brandon Ingram. He could have been here had it not been for the fact that the New Orleans Pelicans had matching rights. But imagine what we would be with Trae Young and Brandon Ingram, John Collins, and Clint Capella. Yeah. You know, that is otherworldly type of stuff right there. So I think this is going to awaken the imagination of NBA players. And that is what you do if you're a team that's trying to break through and become this next great franchise. It is basically just to create some sort of interest from stars, young stars preferably,
mm-hmm.
where you basically say, we are this candidate. We are this team. You know, we are the ones that you're looking for. You want to go somewhere where you can win and where you can have a long-ass window? This is us. Right here, right now. Come get it.
Yeah. I agree. I definitely agree. I think we are... both set on Ingram getting maxed from New Orleans right away because the downside is too great.
Right.
So let's just move on to another genuinely very good player on the market this summer, Danilo Gallinari.
I mean, what's not to like outside of the injuries, right?
Yeah. The age, I guess, because a lot of the teams with cap space are rebuilding, but you don't have to sign him to a four-year deal.
You don't have to, and at the same time, even if you do spend a lot of money on him, when he's healthy, he's just flat-out productive. He's giving you a ton of threes at a very, very high, you know, efficiency rate. He's getting to the free-throw line. He's always been notoriously good at getting to the free-throw line. Where he's hitting like almost 90% a game game percentage. He's a good-ish kind of rebounder. He can slide down to the three on occasion if you want to. I don't think that's him anymore. But he's just so productive. And what I really like about him, and I think this gets forgotten when we talk about Gallo, is when he plays the four, he is so good at taking larger fours and centers off the dribble. Like, his on-ball ability, that's very, very good. It's very, very European in having a tall guy who can dribble, but he's right there. Like, he can go from point A to point B with a live ball dribble without coughing it up a whole lot, and that has value.
Yeah. Yeah. The question is, as always...
Yeah,
who should be interested in him if OKC does not re-sign him?
If any contender who is willing to give something up in some sort of sign and trade scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone.
Well, let's start with Miami because they're the one contender with cap space. We know they were interested in him at the trade deadline. They just couldn't come to terms on an extension. I don't know if we've ever heard the full extent of what they offered, whatever. I'm assuming they offered the same deal as what they gave Iggy, where it's basically a 2-year extension, second-year team option, or a second-year non-guaranteed.
Yeah, I wouldn't I wouldn't have hesitated giving him more years if that's the case. Now, obviously, we don't know if that's the case.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm wondering, Miami's the one out there. Again, we'll see where the cap falls, how much money they have. If Giannis signs that Supermax, and if they don't think LeBron, Kawhi, Paul George are going to opt out in 2021.
Right.
All of a sudden, the best free agents are like maybe Drew Holiday if he opts out, Oladipo, Rudy Gobert. Do you wait for a shot at one of those guys in a much more crowded market? Or do you go after a guy like Gallo now knowing, like, holy crap, this guy would be a perfect fit and like could really make us an actual championship contender next year?
I go after Gallo, I think, because he fits age-wise. The mm-hmm. one thing that concerns me about Gallo in Miami, and I don't think this has been brought up enough, the Heat, they practice a ton. Mm. They practice a lot. They wear their players down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And Gallo has a significant injury history. There's a part of me that's concerned about that. Now,
that's fair.
On the other hand, you could also argue that they have these world-leading coaches and medical staff and like training staffs. And right. the reason that they you know put all this effort into training and have these long practices and all of that is actually an asset in keeping these players' bodies more healthy, in which mm-hmm. case you could make the counter-argument that it would actually be good for Gallinari to go there.
Right,
so
right.
it depends on what side of the fence you are, really.
Yeah.
But I just think it's necessary to bring it up because we don't really know. I don't work for the Heat, unfortunately, so I can't answer that question.
Right. Right.
But I sure. think fit-wise, you just said it. It's the perfect fit. Like, even if you look at it in different levels, he fits with... If we just look at it as Bam and Gallo, oh, yeah, they fit because you can stretch... He can stretch the court, Gallo, and allow more space for Bam to attack from 15 mm-hmm. feet and in. Plus, mm-hmm. you know, Bam is going to get you the shot blocking. He's going to get you the rebounding. He's also going to give you an extra layer of passing. So it's not just going to be Gallo making entry passes. This is going to be Bam finding Gallo on the outside for spot-up threes a ton. Now you yeah. look at Jimmy Butler and look at that in a vacuum, like the Jimmy Butler-Gallo comparison. Jimmy, much like Bam, fantastic and very, very underrated playmaker. Now, the great thing about Jimmy is that he's a defensive game changer. So you take a ton of the defensive pressure off of Gallo and you maximize his offensive potential because, like I just said, Jimmy will get the ball to him. Jimmy can break down a defense and then on the right wing or left wing or in the corners, you have Gallo spotting up because teams can't circle in on him because Duncan Robinson exists. Like they mm-hmm. also have to look at him. Kendrick Nunn can hit the three, so they also have to look at him. Like there are just so many components there that would allow Gallo to really fly under the radar and be this uber efficient player, which he already is. Like let's be honest, this year and last year, like even last year with the Clippers, he had a true shooting percentage of 63. This year it was 61. For a guy who takes that many threes and that many jump shots, that is outrageously good. Now having him go to Miami, where you have multiple playmakers, you have multiple shot creators, and you have a spaced out offense in large part because of Duncan Robinson. Like, hello, Gallinari as a 47% 3-point shooter potentially.
Yeah. If I'm Miami, I 100% make a run at him again this summer if we can find terms that we can agree on. Especially if Giannis. I mean, God, even if Giannis doesn't sign the Supermax, unless you're pretty damn sure you're going to get him, you're gambling. You're gambling on giving up a potentially perfect fit.
Right.
Unless you can get Gallo to sign a one-year deal or sign the 1+1 deal where he doesn't have control over his future in 2021. But I don't know, man. I mean, you better be damn sure you're getting Giannis if you're giving up a chance to sign someone like Gallo where you're not going to have the competition that you will for Giannis.
Can I ask a question here? Because you know the Miami and Giannis thing, that bothers me a little bit. What does Miami have to offer that Milwaukee can't?
In terms of...
Like roster, championship aspirations, whatever.
Pat Riley's ring presentation where he drops all of his championship rings on the table?
Oh, yes. That is completely going to convince me. Thank you for letting me look at your rings. That means that I'm automatically going to change my entire life because of that. Yes, great showing, Pat Riley.
It's. I guess you could argue they have Jimmy plus Bam, whereas Milwaukee has Chris Middleton plus Brook Lopez.
Plus Eric Bledsoe, who on a per minute basis was really, really good.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I could see the appeal of him going to Miami. No state taxes, great weather, whatever. I get it. But again, like, you better be damn sure he's going to choose you.
Right.
If you're giving up a shot at Gallo.
I'm just looking at that trio, because the three best players on that Miami team would be Jimmy, Giannis, and Bam.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I know where you're going.
Right?
Just zero shooting.
Zero.
Yeah.
How? I mean, yeah. I love Jimmy. You know I love Jimmy Butler. You know I love Bam. You know I love Giannis. That's not the issue here. But my God, I mean, that paint is going to get close. I don't care if Duncan Robinson hits 500 threes. I don't care.
Yeah.
And it might actually be necessary.
They would have to max Duncan Robinson next summer just to have some semblance of floor spacing.
Right. Like, of course they can make follow-up moves. They, you know, they can trade Bam for a haul.
Yeah.
And then they can switch Giannis up to center and then just get as much shooting in there. But even so, like, how many offenses today have two players, and here, this case would be Jimmy and Giannis, who are non-shooters who are legitimately championship contenders?
Right. There you go. I was about to say the Sixers, and so you said that last part.
Oh yeah, no. You guys are pretenders.
Yeah. Oh yes. Yeah. I mean, not even like the Lakers would be the obvious. Like they have a ton of bigs, but you know Davis is a good 3-point shooter, or at least he can. I would take him in a 3-point shooting contest over any of the three: Butler, Giannis.
Right.
Bam.
I don't like the fit there. I just look also at Chris Middleton, right?
Right.
So the chemistry is there. I know we're going off on a tangent here. I hope that's okay. But
I think it's fair because I think Miami is the one place for Gallinari this summer. If he's not going to re-sign in OKC,
right?
Miami makes the most sense from him in terms of who has cap space,
right?
Who is ready to contend? Like the guy's 31. Turning 32 in August, he's not going to want to go back to the Knicks. The Hawks are the only other one where it's like, okay, sure, you know, he would be a nice fit if they're ready to move on from John Collins. Great. A lot of shooting there. Fine. But are the Hawks going to be ready to contend by the time, you know, you are catching him, a guy with a lot of injuries in his career.
Yeah, no.
Turning 32 in August. Like, he's got to be ready to win right now. So I think he is probably going to lean toward a contender, so hence the Miami discussion.
Right. Can I throw a fun team your way, even though they would completely... I don't know how it would fit because he's a power forward, but he would be fun with the Pacers.
Oh. Like if they signed and traded him and got Miles Turner back?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I don't want to give up Turner because if you start Sabonis and Gallo, you are going to be bleeding points.
Yeah, it's just a layup line.
Right, but offensively, could you just imagine the Sabonis Gallo like potential there?
Yeah.
And then Malcolm Brogdon getting into it and Victor Oladipo back?
Mm-hmm.
And no, TJ Warren thrown in as well? Like, that offense could be so potent.
Yeah. But yeah, the defense.
Oh, but the defense. The defense would be... But those games might be fun, not just for the Pacers scoring 130, but you would see opponents score 140 on the regular.
Right.
That might be a team where Ben Simmons is going to start draining threes. That might be one of those, you know, regular season games where Ben Simmons is going to be like, screw it. This is a fun game. I'm going to launch a three and people are going to lose their damn minds.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, Gal is a really good player and... he should definitely get more than the non-taxpayer MLE, which is why we're limiting our discussions. Because I think, yes, it's either Miami or a sign-and-trade. I'm sure OKC would love to sign-and-trade him. I don't think you would have to, if they get anything in return, that's great for them. But it's just a matter of figuring out how to make that work.
Did Gallo leave Denver on good terms? I don't remember any friction.
I don't either.
So if we just assume he did,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't he be a fun Paul Millsap replacement?
Well, depends. We're about to get into the Nuggets because they have two guys.
I know.
Millsap and Jeremy Grant. I
mean, then this is a perfect segue then afterwards.
Yeah. They traded him in July of 2017. Yeah. God, this is a gross trade.
I know. It's not great, but like,
yeah.
He had success in Denver.
Yeah. No, he would be next to Jokic.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. He would be. Again, the defense would be the concern with that team in general at that right. point, but who cares when you're scoring 150?
That's the thing. They're leaning into being like an offensive team anyway, and Jokic has actually improved defensively, so maybe. I don't know. Look, this is a free agency podcast, so we're spitballing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because again, you run into the problem of limited cap space for these guys. So if you don't get creative, and agents, I'm sure, are going to have to this summer. I wrote about this at Forbes recently, where it's like, you know, we saw a ton of sign-in trades last year, which we hadn't seen in years prior. I think there were four total between 2015 and 2018. And then there were far more than that last summer alone. You know, we had the D'Angelo KD one, Kemba and Terry Rozier one. We had the Jimmy was in a sign-in trade as well. So when you have a market with only six teams with cap space, teams, maybe they're just going to say, screw it, we're not going to be players in free agency at all. But if they're looking for an upgrade, they're going to have to get creative, work a sign-in trade. So,
yeah.
That, you know, this isn't to say that Gallo's only option is Miami or OKC this summer. It's just like those are the two easiest ones.
Right. I agree.
And I could see OKC re-signing him, you know, like how we've talked about before with Denver and Nene and the Clippers and Blake Griffin, like signing him to a reasonable contract knowing you plan to flip him later for assets.
I think we actually even talked about that a couple months back. I think that makes a lot of sense. He would have to stay healthy.
Right. Right.
Because the current Blake Griffin is not really that kind of a player anymore.
No. But yeah, I mean if he does stay healthy, like you sign him to a three-year, $55-60 million deal, he'll have value.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just saying that Detroit, who actually ended up trading for Griffin, they might have thought, oh, okay, we can always flip him at a later date, and
That ended poorly.
Oh, man, they should have so traded him after last year.
Yeah.
He was so good.
Definitely. They missed their window for sure.
They did.
Yeah. All right, let's get into, before we hit Denver, because we'll hit both of those guys, let's get into one of the best surprises of the 2019-2020 season, and that is Davis Bertans, who the Spurs, speaking of things that teams regret.
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it because I'm just going to get a certain someone in my mentions. I love you, Jesse. It's fine.
What up, Jesse? yes. We don't need to cover those grounds. But he went to Washington, just started absolutely bombing away from deep. 42.4% on 8.7 attempts per game. This is going to be one guy, you've been saying this a lot lately, like, I like this guy, but he needs to start shooting more from three. Bertans, you might still say that about Bertans, but he definitely increased his volume substantially compared to past seasons.
I want Bertans to shoot 18 threes a game next year.
There we go. Old reliable. All right. Well, regardless, I mean, if you're looking for, a three-point bomber at the four, here you go, Davis Bertans. Definitely a guy. You agree that he should get more than the mid-level?
Yes, of course. Of course. Yeah. Look, here's the thing. Something that we forget sometimes when we talk about shooters, like we only focus on the shooting aspect, right? And we kind of say, okay, this guy will hit a ton of shots from range, and it'll help space out the defense, yada, yada, yada. What we also forget once in a while is the amount of points that is actually being accumulated for that specific player. Like, Davis Bertans averaged 15.5 points per game. That is a lot of points for any NBA team. Shooters can just get up points in a hurry. Like, Joe Harris, who we talked about on the last episode, like, he's dropping 13 a game, which is, you know, good. It's not Bertans level, but it's fine. And then he was the guy I was saying, you know, I want to see him shoot more threes because he's so good at it. Look, if he hits just one more three a game, he's at 16 points. Joe Harris is.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes all the difference in the world if you can become that type of consistently, you know, reliable kind of scorer. And for Bertans, who's giving this amount of points and this amount of shooting by just being mostly a catch-and-shoot guy, even though that dude will sure as hell dribble in and pull up from 40 because he does that, and it's insane.
Yeah.
But it means he doesn't have to work with the ball in his hands. In other words, this is a guy who gives you 15.5 points a game while turning the ball over 1.1 times. You know how we used to do the whole assist-to-turnover ratio?
Mm-hmm.
I want to be. I'm interested in seeing that being adjusted into shot amounts, like shots taken, like field goal attempts.
Mm-hmm.
Because assist to turnovers aren't necessarily the only thing we should be looking at. A guy can lose the ball when he's shooting or takes a lot of shots. Like Bertans takes 11 shots a game, scores 15 points, and turns the ball over one time a game, roughly. This means that he is superbly efficient because lowering your amount of turnovers adds to that efficiency. Like, if he's a guy who, you know, has the same shooting percentages as now but averaged 3 turnovers a game, he would be less efficient.
And I'm glad you brought up his range too, because it's not just it's not like he's spotting up in the corners alone.
Right.
Here's the list of guys who shot at least the league leaders in 3-point field goals from at least 27 feet this season.
Oh boy.
Damian Lillard is at 108. He leads the league. James Harden's 100. Trae Young, 96. Bertans is at 74.
God.
Lillard shot 41.5% on these shots from 27 or above.
Harden was 37. Which is really good, by the way.
Yeah, outrageous. Harden was 37.5. Trae Young, 35.3. Davis Bertans, from 27 feet or further from the basket, 47.4%.
Oh my God.
Now, a lot of them, 66 of the 74 were assisted, whereas Lillard, Harden, and Trey, of them were not.
I don't even care if they were assisted. That doesn't matter to me. That's insane.
Right. Right.
So basically what we're saying is he's way better at shooting, you know, even longer away from the basket than closer to the 3-point line. Meaning that from, you know, henceforth, as soon as he crosses mid-court, you need to have a body on him.
Yeah, he had his effective field goal percentage from 27 or away was 71.2%.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
That's fifth highest in the league. Shake Milton, Isaiah Thomas, Kelly Olynyk, Jordan Clarkson were the only ones higher.
Oh my God, why haven't I not thought about this before? Why not Bertans to Golden State?
If they could somehow financially make it work.
Right.
Yeah. That'd be incredible.
No, but see, this bothers me. We, you know, as an NBA community, we're so busy giving up Giannis to Lord knows everyone. Like, 20 teams are being mentioned about Giannis, right? Because, it's the Bucks. Nobody wants to stay with the Bucks, which is a faulty premise in and of itself. But let's not go there. Correct. But then we have these guys who are not superstars, but who would have these tremendous, tremendous fits in other organizations. But we just don't bring him up because, hey, it's not an all-star. It's not an all-star. Davis Bertans in Golden State. You know, can you realistically tell me that he would not help them significantly in bringing them back to a potential championship?
I mean, find me a team that he wouldn't significantly help.
Right, no, but I'm talking about like a contender.
Yeah.
And I understand that, you know, contender, that doesn't imply this year, but, you know, everyone is injured, yada, yada, yada.
Right. But, I mean, I would say the same, like, for all of the arguments we just had with Gallo to Miami, could you not say the same about Bertans?
Yeah. And for a longer time, even, because he's 4 years younger. Well,
right, or exactly.
Three, four, I don't even know. He's turned 27. Okay.
Yeah, so 4 years younger. Well, more than four years younger.
Almost five, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, the Warriors, I think the problem is they are already in luxury tax hell, and I just can't, I don't know how, they're only going to have the taxpayer MLE. Bertans is going to get a lot more than that.
Right.
But Miami, I could see as a realistic suitor for him, but again, the length of the contract is the concern. Atlanta, too. If they're not sold on John Collins, Bertans, I mean, he turns 28 in November, but, like, that's fine.
So, wait. I'm sorry. I just have wet dreams of Trae Young and Davis Bertans just crossing half court, Brian.
Yeah, like, just trading 28-foot bobs the entire game? You'd have two of the four best deep shooters in the league on one team.
That spacing would be completely insane.
I mean, it would, like, be game-breaking.
I mean, we would be talking about Daryl Morey sitting there going, damn it!
Watching Russell Westbrook just jack up shots instead.
Yeah, but I mean, just the spacing, this is what he's going after. Yeah. This would be groundbreaking. Yeah. This would be an evolutionary step. Basically, right. Teams would have to stretch out their defense to not just 27 feet, because let's be honest, it was 27 feet and longer.
That's what I looked up. I can we'll go to 30. Let's see what 30 feet. Jeez, good lord. So, of course, the efficiency goes down, but 30 feet or more. Dame still led the league. 49 made threes from 30 feet or more. Trae Young was second at 38. Bertans was number three at 18. Bertans from 30 feet or more. 18 of 26. He shot almost 70%.
Yeah, so I'm going to need Atlanta to sign his guy.
If we get Atlanta to sign Bogdanovich and Davis Bertans, it's over.
Yeah.
They're my new team.
I'm going to have an article up on this on Forbes. I'm calling it. This is outrageous, because this is just, I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah,
like the way that the defenses would try to guard that. Yeah, I can't even imagine what they would do.
They can't do anything. I think that's the point. You would just, as you said, they would be like stretched beyond the capacity to actually defend this team well, just because. Not, I mean, it's already, even with one guy, even with a guy like Lillard or Trae Young, it's so hard to defend them because they have that unlimited range, and you have to send a guy 28 feet, 30 feet from the basket, and that opens up driving lanes. If you now have Davis Bertans on the other end of the court, what do? You're going to have two guys more than 30 feet from the basket?
So here's something that's even crazier, right? So if you put them in a pick and roll situation right after half court.
Yeah.
Like, defenders would have to go 35 feet away from the basket to guard those.
Yeah.
Like, they can, realistically, this is absolutely insane. Teams will not, the pick and roll defense of two players will not be able to sack off 35 to 40 feet away from the basket.
Right.
So you just run Trae Young and Davis Bertans high pick and rolls all game long, because not because the end goal has to be one of them taking a long bomb, but because it opens up everything else. Because then you turn it into a 3-on-3 game, like, for the rest of the guys. Or if Trae Young just gets one step and he's got that on the defender, then it becomes a 4-on-3 scenario. And you still have Bertans way out there sucking away one defender.
Yeah.
And then you have Bogdan, who is more than trigger happy. You have a very reliable DeAndre Hunter. You have Kevin Huerter. Oh my goodness. I had never thought about this before. I'm very, very intrigued right now.
This is in part contingent on Atlanta possibly not being sold on John Collins long term, but I don't even know if it is necessarily, because you could just have a front court rotation of Collins, Capella, and Davis Bertāns.
Yeah, you can. Yes, you can.
Because Collins can shift up to the five. You don't want him there full time, but he can play there.
Right. And because it's only three guys, you can absolutely make sure that Bertāns is getting his, 27 whatever minutes. How many?
Yeah, you can split 29. It 32, yeah. 32, 32, 32. Bam. Three guys.
Yep.
You know, you got DeAndre Hunter too, of course, but I mean, to me, Davis Bertāns is one of the more logical candidates for Atlanta this year. And I don't think it's unreasonable to go up in the $20 million a year range to get him, just because of how indefensible he could make them on offense.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously NBA 2K doesn't have the same ratings in terms of stretching out the defense. Like, they can't even simulate, you know, a guy taking 40-foot jump shots, but I'm going to need to test this thing out.
Yeah. Yeah, please get back to me and let me know how impossible it is to defend.
Good Lord. I don't know why I never paired those up. This is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. There we go.
I'm going to stop gushing now. I apologize.
Good. Then we'll move on to Denver, my former GM team, because they have two guys who are free agents this summer. Paul Millsap is unrestricted. Jeremy Grant, I believe... No, he has a player option.
Yeah, at 9 point something, right?
Yeah, I want to say it was 9.3.
Okay, so roughly the MLE.
Yeah, depending on where it falls, but yes.
And right, but we're assuming it's going to be like a...
Yeah. It'll be within 500,000 no matter what.
Right.
So yeah, I guess the first question is, do you think Jeremy Grant even opts out of that deal? Because if not, we don't need to talk about it.
I mean, I would have to assume so on some level, just because of his age and just mm-hmm. how good he actually is. He just came off a year where he shot 40% from three as well. So the market value seems to be in his favor. He's still a great switchy defender. You know, he can play the four, he can play the five a little bit. If you, in a pinch, you can play him at the three, I wouldn't suggest that. I wouldn't prioritize that whatsoever, but he can. The only knock on him, I feel like, is that he's not a great rebounder.
Mm-hmm.
But in today's league, rebounding has become less of a priority.
Yeah.
So it may not really hurt him whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that defensive versatility makes up for any lack of rebounding.
Exactly. So the question is, what's the market?
Right.
That's what interests me. I don't know. I don't know. I think ultimately it boils down to, as well, do you think that the 40% is a reliable number?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where I stand on that. I mean, he did shoot, I think, 39% his last year at OKC. So it's a 2-year sample size.
Yeah. Yeah, better than 1 year. But I wouldn't trust him to create off the dribble. Like, I think he can, as a catch and shoot guy, sure, he can probably keep it up in that ballpark. But
yeah, he's not going to Bertāns it up.
No. Or if he does, you aren't going to want him to.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he opts out. And I think there might be a market for him, but I don't know that, just given how many teams, again, are above the cap, like, I don't know that Miami would necessarily love his fit next to Bam and Jimmy as much as they would like a guy like Gallo or Bertāns.
Yeah, I agree. This is for a team that needs defense, right?
Yeah, for sure. Like, with Atlanta, again, is the other one with a ton of cap space, but if you have DeAndre Hunter
and Davis Bertāns, who we just gave them.
right. So, I mean, the age lines up well. He just turned 26 in March, mm-hmm. so maybe. But Phoenix, to me, is the one that might make the most sense.
Phoenix is a good one because, you know, Ayton is developing as a defender, but mm-hmm. there's still ways to go.
Right.
So having this defensive presence in Grant, who isn't shot hungry, so he wouldn't take away shots from neither Booker or Ayton, would make a lot of sense. The question to me is, can you get away with, you know, playing a team playing a brand of basketball where you have Ricky Rubio at the one and Jeremy Grant at the four.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get that, you know, the offensive core is Booker, Aiden, and Oubre. And that is no shabby core, offensive core. But mm-hmm. in today's day and age, can you have two guys who aren't as offensively inclined play big minutes in the starting five?
Right. Yeah, I don't know if I have a good answer to that question.
I mean, Rubio's gotten better, to his credit.
Sure.
And I mean, look, I just looked up Grant's stats, specifically the three-point shooting. So he actually hit 115 triples last year in OKC, and he was at 88 this year. So mm-hmm. the volume isn't too shabby.
Yeah.
So maybe. I mean, it's over 200 triples over a two-year period.
Mm.
Maybe?
Yeah, it's not like crazy, but I feel like for both Grant and Denver, the best-case scenario is probably him just re-signing there.
Right.
I know that the fit with him and Jokic didn't get off to a great start at first, but as the year went on, Grant became much better in that system.
Well, I mean, it didn't help that you know Jokic was 455,000 pounds.
Right. That definitely did not help. So, yeah, I mean, what do you think would be a fair deal for Grant this summer or this fall?
If he opts out, you mean?
Yeah.
Probably somewhere around the 12, 13 as a starting point, and then going mm-hmm. up higher maybe towards 14.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
There was one point where I was like 15 would probably be fair, but I think if push came to shove, I wouldn't break that deal over 1 million, but
right.
If it came down to like 17, 18 million, I would say no. That would be a little bit too much.
Yeah. And it always comes down to the question, who's going to offer him that deal, if not. And, I think a lot of teams can and will play hardball this summer, saying, like, all right, cool, you want? Sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, I do hear the Knicks need a power forward, so.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, yeah. So what do you do if you're the Nuggets and you re-sign Jeremy? Do you let Millsap go, or do you try to sign him back as well?
Millsap is an interesting case, right? Because he's clearly getting up there in age, but he's also mm-hmm. still, to some extent reliable.
Yep.
What I don't love is the, the durability.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is clear that he is not the guy that he used to be, and there's no shame in that because, I mean, he's what, 34, 35? Let me see. Just looking him up right now, I just don't remember how old he is. 35. I mean, if for the right price, I keep him in as a sort of a mentor.
Yeah.
But in terms of like my future long-term answer at the power forward position, no way.
Right. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I mean, what do you think the right value is for him contractually?
Not much, to be perfectly honest with you. I know he just got off $30 million. I $10 million for 1 year.
Yeah,
something along those lines. You know what would be my preference, and I understand that Paul Millsap would greatly disagree with me on this because he can still play, but is that he gets an assistant coach salary and he's put on that sideline.
Yeah, something tells me he's not going to be on board with that suggestion.
No, I understand that because he can still play, but right. I mean, are you going to tell me you wouldn't absolutely love to see Paul as an assistant coach?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. That'd be fun.
He is so smart. I think he would. Yeah. Maybe he should start out just as a player development guy. I think he would do wonderfully as that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
For someone who was drafted in the second round, undersized, didn't initially have the spacing down. Like, he just clawed his way into a starting spot and clawed his way into being an all-star, clawed his way into being this all-around respected leader and all-defensive kind of guy. So, yeah. No, I would still want to keep him around in whatever capacity. If that means as a bench player, okay. But mm-hmm. I just cannot commits a significant portion of the cap to someone that age. It's just ill-advised, especially because Denver is such a young team. Like, and they have certain contracts coming up. It would just, yeah, it wouldn't sit well, especially if you like traded Malik Beasley for and Juan Hernan Gomez for virtually nothing. And TJ, I don't care what you say, it was virtually nothing.
Right.
Yeah, you know, no, then it's not going to fly that Millsap is going to get like an insanely big deal.
Yeah, no, I think you want to. I mean, the years are the bigger concern than the price point,
right,
to some extent. I mean, Denver is going to flirt with the tax this year, depending on where the cap falls. So I think you want to also keep that in mind. But yeah, I think, you know, you just don't want to give them a 4-year deal.
Oh, no. I mean, he's 35.
Right. So, like, a 2-year deal in the 20, you know, like 2 years, $20 million. Okay.
Yeah.
3 years probably gets me nervous.
Yeah, partial guarantee, maybe.
Yeah. Mm hmm. Mm hmm. Yeah, I would not give him 3 full guaranteed years.
No. Yeah.
But he's also a guy who a lot of contenders, like, if the Nuggets can't re sign him for whatever reason, a lot of contenders could use a Paul Millsap.
Yeah.
And I think that's a guy who you should be willing to use most, if not all, of your MLE on.
Ooh. I know. Milwaukee.
Are you going to say Dallas again?
Milwaukee.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Ooh, that would be good. Because you could play him
as a 4, as a 5.
Yeah, like, I don't even know. Would he be the small ball 5 and Giannis would be the 4? I don't know
how. Or the other Giannis way around. You know what? It doesn't matter.
Right.
He'll give you defense. He'll give you rebounding. He'll give you 3-point shooting. He's a buck, man.
I was thinking Clippers. If they lost Montrezl.
Oh, no. No, no, no. They need... No, come on. That's not a good trade-off.
Well, but if, for whatever reason, like, if some team comes out with, like, $25 million a year for Montrezl, and they're like, no.
Yeah, but then they would be limited to 9.4, right? Non-PAX 6.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they should be under the... Yeah. But they could throw 2 years 20 at Millsap.
Yeah, I guess they could. I wouldn't love it, is what I'm saying. Because here...
That's fair.
I mean... You need almost to replace Harrell with someone who's athletic and energetic.
Yeah.
And I love Millsap, but that dude is not athletic nor energetic.
No. I'm shocked you didn't say Dallas.
Well, so usually I like the whole idea of getting guys who are like age relevant.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And I think Millsap is just a bit too old for that group.
Yeah.
Prime Millsap, though. Like, prime Millsap on that team?
Yeah.
Hell yes. But that's like 10 years ago. Oh, that's not true. 7 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. All right, any other big-name power forwards that we should discuss? I think we hit most of them, like the Dario Saric's of the world.
Right.
Are probably settling with the MLE. Jamichael Green, same deal.
I mean, I have a fun one, but it's a little obscure.
Okay, hit me.
And it's also, I'm not really sure if he has an NBA out.
Oh boy. You were not kidding about obscure. I'm excited.
I mean, I wouldn't dislike seeing Nikola Mirotic return to the NBA.
Oh, there you go. That's a fun one. That'd be cool.
I will say this, though. He has been outstanding for Barcelona.
Mm.
A clear-cut MVP level player. And he's gotten, like, he is, like, super famous over here. And, like, they, you know, basketball players over here gets you know, who are role players in the NBA get treated like rock stars. You know, some teams pay for a player's taxes. So what he gets in salary, he actually gets in salary.
Yeah.
They pay for housing. They pay for cars. It's the sweet life. It's really the sweet life, and you don't have to, you know, play 82 games a year plus playoffs. Mm-hmm. You don't get punched in the face by Bobby Portis.
That's a win.
That's also a win. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know. There's something in me that says it could be fun to see Mirotić before he gets too old make a return to the league. I you know, there was like this $12 million offer, you know, per annually on the table, allegedly from Utah.
Oh, right, right, right. It was like 4 years, $45 million or something like that?
Something, yeah. Yeah, so it might be a little bit less than 12.
Yeah.
And he turned that down to go to Barcelona, but, I mean, you know, that guy can play. And he was a pretty versatile defender, too. And I think it was kind of a shame what happened to him in the NBA, because when you look at his skill set, it is just so tailored to the NBA today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he would be fun, especially for the Nuggets, right?
Oh, he'd be great. Yeah.
Again, I don't even know if he has an NBA out. I've been trying to figure out his contract for a while. And most of the people I talk to, they can tell me how long it goes and roughly the value. But in terms of the NBA out, I have no clue.
Yeah. Well, that's a good name to keep on the radar for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll take some convincing, but it might. Oh,
right.
Oh, I mean, now he's free to sign with the Spurs. We made plenty of Mirotić Spurs jokes over the years.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
I'm saying.
God. Sorry, Spurs fans, for this entire episode.
Insert pop gif of him running.
Yeah, right. Right. All right. Well, that's a good place to wrap up. We have one more position left, and then hopefully we'll have the NBA back by that point. Or at least have some news about the NBA coming back. There has been increasing optimism about the season resuming at some point. So we are staying in tune with that, but we're not going to discuss it till we hear anything concrete. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. And honestly, if the NBA returns and it goes the whole Disney route, we'll try our best to get Keith Smith on, because he deserves some credit for that.
Oh, for sure. For sure. All right, later, man.
Later.